Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another podcast with the Rowdy Buddhist. I hope all of you are doing well. Please remember to join us for our meditation during the weekdays on our Rowdy Buddhist YouTube channel. Everyone is welcome. Hope to see you there. Today, we will go more into depth of the five hindrances, beginning with the first being worldly desire. Also, this is sometimes referred to as sense desire. That's very important to understand because most people are run by their senses. This worldly desire is simply when we pursue delight in and cling to the pleasure of material existence. This also means desiring to avoid the opposite. These desires, of course, include gaining material objects and preventing their loss, having pleasurable experiences and avoiding pain, achieving fame, power, and influence while avoiding infamy and impotence. And, of course, as we all want, attaining love and admiration of others while avoiding hatred and blame. In Buddhism, these are usually referred to in some traditions as the eight worldly dharmas. So there's an easy way to remember this. And of course, in our practice, we should understand both the hindrance and its opposite. Gain is loss. Pleasure, pain. Fame, obscurity. And praise, opposite being blame. You know, this particular desire is really a part of our nature, right? Our biological makeup, our programming. Because we wish to have pleasure and not pain. We spend our whole life, all of our money, all of our time in this pursuit. But many people haven't asked themselves the effects that this pursuit, this desire, and what it would mean if we didn't have that. Would it be bad? Would it be negative? Would we die? Many people believe that if their desires are not fulfilled, that even they will die. That's how serious people are attached. Worldly desire simply evolved in our minds because in the natural world, we have to strive for survival. And in doing that, we need the resources. Also, reproduction. And that takes lots of our effort, a lot of our motivation, our time. We are absolutely programmed from birth in our body and mind to take pleasure in desire and to pursue that. Throughout our entire life, staying healthy, getting the person that we want, even to the instinctual idea of creating offspring of ourselves. And again, we should know that we are social animals, even though we may say we are not. So we also very much take deep and gain deep happiness in acceptance. And, of course, flattery and appreciation of others. We crave at our deepest level to have acceptance, to gain some purpose of status, of power. And many people will say, you know, since I'm not so interested in that. But yeah, in some situations, you know, they can be very subtle. So these, of course, are very extreme. Because in speaking of the extreme, people can understand better. But of course, we should look insightful into our life to see how even subtle aspects of this can be. See what is driving us towards our behavior. This innate aspect of our life to desire whatever we can have that brings us pleasure, even momentary pleasure, and even later causing pain and harm. Of course, Many times, most people, if they're in the pursuit of desire or pleasure, don't think that far. But we have to admit that in many ways, this has made people successful. So just to simply sit here and say that this is bad or negative would be ignorant. These aspects have allowed people to become successful. But we also need to ask ourselves, what is true success? Because in the practice of Buddhism, we are looking to see, and the basic noble truth is that the things that we desire, that we seek in this life, don't give lasting happiness, momentary happiness, and even in many cases are followed by negative effects, pain, etc. So, in trying to really understand what is pleasurable, what is happiness, we need to come to the reality check, not simply do the dualistic idea of good and bad. Yet when we look at the effects that desire, the seed of desire, has on our life, we can consider that the world has indeed changed. And many times people talk about these basic instincts that we have in the development, okay, of the world itself, right? In our growth. The world is quite different than when perhaps these instincts would have been used more effectively. Since the world has changed, the very important aspects of sex, food, has changed. Even the idea of food, foods are now processed, high calorie, salty, etc. And also today we have so many labor-saving devices. We don't have to plow the field anymore. So unrestrained desire leads not to simply involving in things that may bring us pleasure, but we all in this modern world, we always leads to overconsumption, which of course brings health problems. Also, that everything is available to us, and that through our practice of meditation, these aspects can become revealed. That is why what you may consider sacred today may indeed evolve and change through your practice of meditation. And it's important to say that meditation is not the repressing of worldly desires. What it simply is doing is giving us direct experiential insight, as Kageyama Sensei says, into many ways that the desire leads to pain and anxiety. This is the first noble truth, that these unsatisfactory, non-lasting aspects that we just involve all of our time, energy, money, life, we give up our life for these things, that they don't bring us what they're supposed to. They don't give us lasting happiness, lasting contentment, insight into the many ways that desire, okay, that we are being ruled by desire, will allow us to free ourselves because we are able to see and cultivate the opposite instead, such as non-grasping and equanimity. Then our motivations, instead of coming from the ego, coming from the idea of only if I take care of self, right? Which as we grow, we can understand the idea of interdependence, that we rely on others, that our enlightenment, our happiness is not only up to us. That as we do this, we will come from a place of generosity, loving kindness, and joy for all. But it's important for us to know that worldly desire is so deeply embedded into our nature. Again, as we said, not to say that this is negative. This is a kind of survival aspect. We can see this in the 10 worlds, that even the Buddha has this mind of desire. But many people might have big trouble and actually huge opposition, right? Because usually it comes down to ego, that without ego, how can I survive? Many people think that without desire, how could they continue to live without it? However, we should understand that in the evolution, we as intelligent beings should no longer simply be directed by compulsive desire to be selfish or egotistical. We can effectively behave and grow from a foundation of reason and equanimity. This is why meeting the Buddha's teaching is so essential. And then from that point, if we are coming from the reason and equanimity, and this is important because Buddha did teach a reason. He was against the superstition, superstitious beliefs simply made as a antidote for the suffering of beings, that they can simply believe in something, and that by believing in something which may be in contradiction to reality, they can change. But actually, Buddhism is reality. We focus on the reality, and we gain the proper insight of that reality. And then as we understand and integrate ourselves and integrate that reality into our natures, right? To realize our natures, not into our natures, because our natures are naturally integrated. But we need to integrate ourselves beyond simply the concept of thought, right? Or ego, to allow these aspects of generosity and loving kindness to be able to enhance our lives. Okay, and also see how these aspects are actually helping us in our survival. Because accomplishing something with these aspects as your foundation rather than desire, you will be able to enjoy accomplishments more. It's not saying that Buddhists are against accomplishment, right? Or even desire. But understanding it within its correct context is what Buddhism is allowing us to do. Eliminating, simply saying eliminating the desire to lessen our experience and happiness is not what the Buddha is asking us to do. It is simply allowing us to gain the insight, the correct awareness of, which allows us to be free from craving. Craving is something that is not enjoyable. Craving is something that, even if we get what we want, it's not good enough. They did a research with the modern times, like what was available in the 1900s, how many choices, and how many choices are available now. And they were looking at the concept of the idea of satisfaction with one's choices, which was very fascinating because they said that, in many, how do you say, gross national product or development, etc., that it says that the more choices you have, the more happy of a consumer you are. That is why we try to create as many choices and objects that we can. But when they did this study, they realized that people who had less choices were more happy with their decision than people who had multiple choices. Because even if they picked the best choice for them, their mind was always stating is that there is a more choice. This may not be the best. So therefore, even their level of satisfaction or happiness was dropping, even though they had the best object for them, the best choice. But in the past, because they maybe had only two or three, or at most four options, their level of happiness or enjoyment of that object was higher. It's very interesting. We tend to do a lot of things in the opposite direction of what actually is bringing us true contentment, true happiness. The practices that we'll teach you will make you more aware of the desire, and give you opportunities to practice allowing it to become quieter. Tsukamoto Sensei drew this big circle, and as I was saying previously, the circles of whatever your big attachments were, anger, etc. And enlightenment would usually, by the time you got to enlightenment, it would be very small. But actually, when we practice this mindfulness, this awareness, the dhyana, that aspect can grow. The others become more quiet. Because again, we're quieting the mind. That's a much better word. So quieting the mind, unifying the mind, is the meditation factor that allows us to go beyond, or in a way oppose, the hindrance of worldly desire. As the mind becomes unified through dhyana, as I stated, it becomes quieter. It weakens. It becomes so quiet that we may not even know what's there, because that's not the first thing leading us. As we know, whatever our biggest desire is, that is leading us. That is directing us, directing our mind, directing our body. And these become quiet, not only in our meditation, but from our daily life. If we experience this firsthand, this can be an amazing transformation for us. Now, it's important that we're not saying that we simply become stoic and adverse to pain or adverse to pleasure, that we oppose this. But rather, we see things clearly because our mind is filled with joy, calmness, and awareness. With this unified mind, we won't have a reason to chase worldly desires because we will understand what that means. We can live our life more dynamic, because of the freedom of the fear of making choice. The amount of energy and time that we put into that craving. And by doing this, this will open our mind and our lives to endless possibilities. That is the reason for the Buddha's teaching. So you are very lucky to have the opportunity to study and practice. I hope that this will be a motivation to go ahead, deepen your practice, keep a consistent practice. And I thank you all for your time and your faith and practice. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo.